With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you have something to say,
stand up for what you believe,
what people are saying.
55.
I want to see new people.
KRC.
The people.
The talk station.
At 55 KRC. The talk station. Friday Eve.
I'm the dude, man.
Hey, I'm Brian Thomas. My executive producer is Joe Strecker. We've got everybody covered there, and we've got you covered, too, if you'd like to call and comment about something. Got quite a few issues going on today, as we do every single day. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. And look forward to hearing from you. Maybe you want to talk about the sexual molestation that's going on in Joe Biden's migrant facilities. Yeah, that's possible. Imagine they probably would have hauled Donald Trump out of office and crucified him if this had happened under Trump's watch. Can you only imagine? Children in cages. Remember this? Remember the refrains of children in cages? Children in cages. Oh, my God. Well, look at what's going on now. And, you know, we've got to get to this at some point. Where in the hell's Kamala Harris? I've heard many commentators speculating that she's dissing Joe Biden. This is like, he says, I place Kamala Harris in charge of the border. She's nowhere near the border. Well, I know she's getting Danishes in Chicago. Yeah. And then she flew to California for something completely different, totally unrelated to the border. She's close to the border, but doesn't bother going down there. Up in Chicago, Joe, she was coordinating COVID-19 injections. Sure she was. And eating Danish from local bakeries. She didn't have time for the border, but what is with that? Doesn't that seem rather bizarre to you? Joe Biden says the vice president of the United States of America is going to handle this issue. Now, they, of course, don't call it a crisis. I suppose it's much like, what does the word infrastructure mean to you? What does the word crisis mean to you, and does it apply to the border? I suppose it depends on your perception of the border and its in the point of it as to whether or not the unmitigated stream of new folks coming into our country is a good or bad thing. To me, it's a bad thing. We're not keeping track. We've got disease. We have terrorists being arrested. We have criminals, gang members, and lots and lots and lots and lots of drugs. Apparently, there's a huge appetite for drugs here in this country. You know, if there wasn't an appetite for drugs in this country, it wouldn't be flowing over the border and it wouldn't be a problem. But, you know, welcome to the reality of thus it has ever been. But a whole lot of extremely bad people coming over with some very innocent people that, you know, are victims of, I don't know, perhaps coyotes, perhaps victims of Joe Biden's promise of citizenship. Victims of the reality of a lax border policy brought to you by Joe Biden in his first moments in office, basically drawing a line through all of what were quite effective impediments to making the trip to the United States border. Now, the impediments aren't there anymore. Word's getting around. Coyotes making billions of dollars of bringing these children and others up to the border where they are placed in, what, refugee camps, concentration camps, cages. Setting up a horrific scenario where after children presumably have been abused and molested throughout the entire trip, you think you finally made it over the finish line, getting into the great United States that had been, with all the promises that everyone has made to you, and you're put in a concentration camp to be molested again. But where's Kamala Harris on this? You know, and you'd think being a woman, you know, a person with so much more compassion, we hear about women being much better at politicians, and gee, if we only had women in charge, there wouldn't be wars being waged, and the world would be a much better place. They have compassion and warmth in their hearts, unlike the cold and callous, uncaring, unfeeling men of the world. Fine. This issue should be right in her wheelhouse then. Nothing. Zero. Zip. You going to visit the wall? I don't know. I've been there before. I might go back. What's Joe Biden doing? The silence on this one from him is deafening. Hey, Joe, what's going on the border? Oh, I put Kamala Harris in charge of that. Well, yeah. She's not answering any questions, and she's not visiting the border. Do you regret your mistake? Do you by any chance let's move that into one broader category? Do you regret selecting her as your vice presidential candidate? Jeez. Coming up on the 55 Carat C Morning Show, I may as well give you the rundown because you're going to want to be around at least at 7:05 for Vice Mayor Smitherman. Always enjoy talking to Vice Mayor Smitherman. Nuisance bar? What's that, Joe? It says here, being chair of law and public safety, he can't go into detail, but he can speak in generalities. In the local news, a bar on nuisance. City of Cincinnati seeking to declare Banks Bar, at least one of the Banks Bar, Gallup Park, a nuisance once it closed for a year. There's a lawsuit filed alleging underage drinking, a patron dragged outside of the bar, left unconscious, and numerous bar fights. It says here, according to Sharon Coolidge of the NCLR, one so large that downtown's Joe Nuxall Way had to be shut down to break it up. Sounds like a fun spot. Issue 3 and the mayoral candidates, Vice Mayor Smitherman's analysis of that, we all know that Vice Mayor Smitherman is prudent enough to realize that Issue 3 is going to be an awful thing. 20 years since the Cincinnati riot, what improvements have we seen in the Cincinnati Police Department and other areas in the city of Cincinnati? That also a topic for Vice Mayor Smitherman. Then we're going to hear from Gavi Begtrip. Who? Joe doesn't know either. Gavi Begtrip running for mayor. I talked to Rafael Prophet yesterday, and actually, according to the notes here, Gavi is also in favor of Issue 3. And according to Westside Jim Kiefer, who keeps real close track on these, that's two of the total six candidates that are running for mayor that are in favor of Issue 3. The rest of them, I hear, are not. So if the info I got from Westside Jim Kiefer, which is sometimes accurate, Jim, is true. I'd like to hopefully be able to talk to all the mayoral candidates before the primary. That would be a real treat. But we'll get one at 8:05 in the form of Gavi Begtrip. You don't think AFTAB's going to bother returning your call, Joe? I thought all publicity was good publicity. I didn't think you could have bad publicity. What would I ask him that I wouldn't ask somebody like Rafael Prophet yesterday? I would also ask him, though, why he doesn't seem to be satisfied in any particular elected capacity after he gets elected, and he's already moving on. That would be one question I have for him that doesn't apply to the other candidates. Absent that, when it comes down to normal things, Issue 3, budgeting and priorities. Jay Ratliff, our aviation expert, in the heels of Gavi Begtrip being on the program in the 8 o'clock hour at 8:30, Jay will talk about United Airlines and their announcement. And this, I'm sorry, I'm going to default to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., content of character, not color of skin. I will expand that. Content of ability to fly an airplane, not gender or color of skin. Apparently, half of the future hired pilots will be women or people of color, or presumably a combination of both. I don't know how being a woman or a person of any color sets you ahead of or behind the general set, the broader set of people who are qualified to be pilots. Anyhow, we'll get Jay's take on that one. February versus February, international travel is how much down? That's a frightening figure. And finally, hub delays. We always get an update on that. Maybe even some investment advice from Jay. He's quite the investor. Anyhow, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Pound 550 on AT&T phones. We're going to talk about gun control today as well. Biden's apparent to unveil executive actions today. When I kept hearing about, oh, Joe Biden's going to do an executive action, Joe Biden's going to do executive action, I'm thinking, what could he possibly do? It's an amendment to the United States Constitution. How far can an executive action go to fulfill Joe Biden's desire to disarm every single one of us? Now, we'll dive on into that today. And most of it seems to be telling other departments, like Department of Justice, to propose rules. So I'm directing the Department of Justice to do the following. And, okay, they get 60 days or 90 days to come up with something on paper which is reflective of what the administration ultimately wants in the form of gun control. All I can suggest is you might want to get an upper or lower if you're interested in building your own firearm. So-called ghost guns, that seems to be the first thing in the crosshairs, no pun intended, of the Biden administration. My friends at 22-3 actually sell those parts if you're interested in building your own. Anyhow, Foreign Exchange fixes your car.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Hey, plague update. Haven't done that in a while, but heck, why not? And yes, Westside Jim Kiefer is awake. I knew if I said something, you know, to the effect that he didn't always get it right or assuming what he told me is accurate, that'll net you a tweet. What do you mean sometimes? Appreciate you tuning in the program, Westside Jim. It's 519 right now. 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Time for a plague update. As if every day isn't really a plague update. In fact, two of my plague update themes are plague update songs relate to coronavirus. Let's start real quick with one that doesn't. And this is a frightening reality. And the way international travel is, this is the wave of that we have been dealing with. You got the zebra mussels up in the in Lake Erie. You have pythons or whatever in the Everglades. Bottom line is invasive species kudzu. Now we have over at John F. Kennedy International Airport. On Sunday, 22 giant African snails described as, yes, a highly invasive species discovered in a man's bag by U.S. Customs and Border Protection. Well, at least they're keeping that border secure, Joe. A man traveling back from Ghana found with about 24 pounds of prohibited items, including oxtail, dried beef, turkey, berry, carrot, medicinal leaves, and traditional African spice known as prikizi. Never heard of it. Anyway, they warned the giant African snails, some of the most damaging snails in the world because they consume, ready, 500 types of plants and seriously damage plaster and stucco structures. Says they don't only put U.S. agriculture structures at risk. The snails also pose health risks to humans because they carry a parasitic nematode that can lead to meningitis. What the hell? I'm surprised these things didn't come from Australia. It's like everything in Australia seems to be deadly. All right. No kidding. And this is a frightening one. I hope it's not true. I hope they, controlled for other possibilities to answer the question why what their research determined that 1 in 3 coronavirus sufferers went on to receive a neurological or psychiatric diagnosis within 6 months. We go to University of Oxford, where a team published results in Lancet Psychiatry Journal. Sorry about that. I know Joe's still getting the hard copy of that one. 236,000 individuals were researched. Patient diagnosed with COVID-19, flu, and other respiratory tract infections, with the latter two serving as control groups. So you look at COVID, and then you take flu and other respiratory tract infections, and you find out if there's any similarities between this ultimate psychiatric diagnosis. Study identified anxiety and mood disorders as the most common among coronavirus survivors, 17% and 14% respectively. So anxiety experienced by 17%, 14% mood disorders. And here I am, I'm wondering out loud what they mean by mood disorder. I mean, we're still in the middle of a lockdown. Everybody's brother's still worried about COVID-19, whether we're going to die or not. I suspect that might create in and of itself a mood disorder. Just saying. This is out of the 14 total disorders that were viewed under the study. Incidents of other outcomes like insomnia, dementia, and strokes occurred less frequently but were still notable. According to the author, co-author, a professor of psychiatry at Oxford University, although the individual risks for most disorders are small, the effect across the whole population could be substantial. Incidents of anxiety and mood disorders showed a weaker link to COVID-19 severity, researchers noted, suggesting that the occurrence reflects at least partly the psychological and other implications of a COVID-19 diagnosis rather than being a direct manifestation of the illness. I read that. It could be anything. Like, for example, the lockdown. The fact that you're stuck at home with a bunch of people that hopefully you love, but you might not. Your school's been shut down. Your kids are still home. You're wondering why you're on Zoom. Those things may, yes, cause psychiatric problems, which is one of the reasons I brought this up. I'm hoping it's nonsense. And finally, you love this headline. It's the reason it ended up in the stack of the plague update stack. Brazil COVID plague spawning super mutations every week that could destroy the world's fight against the pandemic. Well, there's some optimism. Over in Brazil, where I guess they handle things differently, hospitals at a breaking point, people dropping dead awaiting treatment. Dr. Miguel and Nicolelius, apparently regional co-coordinator of the country's pandemic response team, described Brazil's response as complete calamity. The largest human tragedy in Brazil's history. That are his words. He's talking to the BBC. We may get to 500,000 deaths by July. That's the latest estimate. And let me do my may, might, could, which always suggests to me may, might, could not. Remember early on in the pandemic, they were talking about 2 million deaths in a matter of 6 months. Okay, may, we may experience, you know what, an asteroid may, might, could hit the world tomorrow and we'll all die. I don't think that's going to happen. But if you say it, I suppose if you put may in there, it could be true. Anyway, they called it, he said, it's a nuclear reactor that has set off a chain reaction and is out of control. It's a biological Fukushima. Also warned the increased threat of worrying new strains of the virus as the death toll there hits 337,000, second only to the U.S. Dr. Nicolelis said Brazil is now the only is not only the epicenter of the pandemic worldwide, it's a threat to the entire effort of the international community to control the pandemic on the planet. Reports say, are you ready for this? 92 COVID-19 variants have now been detected in Brazil. That's according to, including P1, which is the Brazil variant. You know, nobody screams racism when you call it the Brazil variant. But if you call it the China virus, everyone seems to get all pissed off at you. I've heard Brazil variant. I've heard that many, many times. The Brazil variant. That's how you keep track of which one we're talking about. Xenophobe. Racist. Anyway. What do you mean, what's the one I can't say? I'm not allowed to say no, the China virus or the Wuhan flu or the Kung flu. You can't say any of those, Joe. Those are forbidden. I think there's more. Indeed. It would be the Asian flu. Although I think there's already been one of those, hasn't there? 526 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station, 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Coming up on 5:32. 55 KRCD Talk Station. We do have a stack of local stories here, but as has been the case of late, we're going to go to the phones and take Tom's call. Hey, Tom, happy Friday Eve to you.
Good morning, Brian with an I, as opposed to Brian with a Y, I guess.
That's it. That's
yeah,
it.
We don't want anyone to confuse that.
No, I don't want anybody to not get 15% off their order. And I don't know if you spell it with a Y, you'll do it. But so that's the point of saying with an I, because I don't know how particular they are over at Odor Exit.
Yeah. Hey, I was outside last night and cooking some steaks, and the wind was blowing my grill out, and I thought, man, it would be a great place to have a windmill back here. You know, I don't know. I'm kicking myself for not doing it any sooner. So
there you are.
Can you imagine if COVID-19 walked around with an AR-15, how many more people would be dead right now?
Thank you, Elyon. Appreciate that one.
We have some geniuses in Congress, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Opportunists is what they are.
Yeah, well.
Hey, are you keeping up with the story on Tiger Woods at all?
Yes, I am, and I was going to bring that up later. It seems to me he got preferential treatment. If you can't
that's white privilege, my friend. That's not preferential treatment. That's white privilege. Wait. No.
Yeah, that wouldn't work, Tom. Okay.
It wouldn't work. See, that this is confusing.
I know. It's
confusing. Don't know. I'll have to tune in to CNN to see if I can figure this out. Thanks, Brian.
Good luck with that, Tom. Take care, my friend. Yeah. If he doesn't remember the accident, he's sort of, you know, incapable of answering very coherent questions after the accident. I would think that would be a sufficient probable cause to do a blood analysis of one's sobriety. Just thinking. Anyhow, I don't. Whatever. Apparently, he was hauling butt around the bend when he went into that accident. Anyhow, I mentioned Rafael. He corrected me yesterday, and I tried to get his first name right. Rafael Prophet, running for Cincinnati mayor, was a firefighter for several decades, and he's still in favor of Issue 3. Like, I'm standing here looking at an article. Cincinnati Fire Department is short staffed, working so much overtime, firefighters exhausted. Sharon Coolidge from the NCAR did a little interviewing over there. High number of fire deaths for residents so far compared to two last year. Cincinnati Fire Department suggests they need resources and additional firefighters to staff the city's 26 firehouses and more than the current 6 fire specialists who conduct safety inspections of property. Cincinnati Firefighters Union President Matt Alter, speaking with the Cincinnati Inquirer, outlined these concerns when asked whether the organization supports the Affordable Housing Charter Amendment Issue 3. I think it's a big no. Charter Amendment, which will be on the ballot May 4th, calls for $50 million at least out of the city's budget every year to be diverted to funding affordable housing. It could result in his words, dire consequences for basic public services. We're basically treading water, he said. We're basically wearing floaties, doing what we can to keep our head above water. This just raises the tide. We will be drowning in high seas. Seems to me he's a little bit more concerned than Rafael Prophet yesterday. And when I asked Rafael, you know, what specifically, you know, how are you going to manage this? You have no idea how much money's going to come in. Going to hire good people. Okay. What are the people going to do with the affordable housing people going to do with the $50 million? What specifically will they be doing that will change this? And he said it himself. This affordable housing thing has been a crisis his whole life. He grew up in meager circumstances himself, and he explained that in detail. But apparently, decades and decades, this has been neglected and ignored. And I'm thinking, well, there are a lot of programs out there. What will this specific allocation of money do specifically to alter the direction and to transform this city into whatever vision you have for it as far as affordable housing? I don't know. Is basically the response I got. Now, I'm not mad at him for that, but you just can't throw money at something without knowing specifically where the money's going and in what way it's going to change the situation. I know it's going to make some employees of not-for-profits extremely wealthy, but beyond that, I don't know what they plan on doing, and apparently neither does he. Executive Transportation, they are awesome at what they do.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
In my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is 5:41 right now. Hit 5:55 KRCD Talk Station. Friday Eve. Vice Mayor Smithman, we get him at 7:05 on a whole host of issues. We're going to talk to Gabby Begtrip, running for mayor, at 8:05, and then aviation expert Jay Ratliff at 8:30 with a bunch of topics. In the meantime, I do have a stack of stupid. Going to dive into this one. I thought this was kind of funny and cute. Oh, real quick here. All right, whoever Christina is there on Facebook, thank you for posting this one. Obviously, a tongue-in-cheek meme. Dog owners, stop saying good boy and good girl to your pets. This kind of gendered language is normalizing the myth of canine sexual dimorphism and delegitimizes the lived experience of trans dogs. Anyway, over to the stack is stupid. 10-year-old Stillwater boy, Stillwater, Minnesota, led police on a chase in his parents' minivan. St. Paul Pioneer Press reporting that the police officer spotted the boy driving the van around 9:30 in the evening Sunday. He knew immediately that the kid was either 10 or 11 years old. The boy fled when the officer activated his emergency lights, leading police on a chase that reached speeds of 50 miles an hour. And at one point, he drove through an intersection and a residential yard in reverse, narrowly missing a tree. That's got some driving skills for a 10-year-old. Anyway, police eventually blocked his path, ending the chase. Nobody hurt, thankfully. Boy told police he was off to Target or a downtown Stillwater co-op because he wanted Cheerios, apparently for breakfast, even though it was 9:30 in the evening. I guess maybe he was planning for next morning's breakfast. Parents told police they were sleeping and had no idea they had taken their van. Wow. Joe thinks the kid will be signed by NASCAR. We have an inebriated partygoer thought his girlfriend was performing. Let me just grasp the sentence. Thought his girlfriend was performing a sexual act upon him, was actually being molested by an Iowa man who's now facing sexual abuse charges. The hell? No kidding. According to the investigators, DNA evidence linked defendant Kyle Aarons, 20 years old, to the assault of the victim, an Illinois college student who was attending a party in Iowa City apartment that his girlfriend shares with Aarons and other roommates. Aarons pleaded guilty last month. I'm sorry, pleaded not guilty to the felony count, free on bond, scheduled for another trial here, a trial on August 10th. As detailed in the police and court records, the victim admitted that he had drank quite a bit and was intoxicated. And when his girlfriend took him into the bedroom so that he could rest, he recalled his girlfriend laying with him until he fell asleep. So far, so good. The victim told police that his next memory was his pants being pulled down and someone starting to perform a sexual act upon him. Not much imagination needed there, adding that he kept his eyes closed. He thought it was his girlfriend, so he let it continue. I normally don't write letters like this, but you'll never believe what happened to me at a party. Thereafter, the victim said he heard the bedroom door open and saw the appearance to be a flash from a cell phone being taken by a male with a beard who was backing out of the room. When the victim awoke the following morning, his girlfriend said that she was not the one that performed the sexual act, and the description of the bearded man matched Aaron's. One of her roommates, Aaron's search warrant application states, arrived at the apartment around the time that the woman was pulling the victim to sleep, or putting the victim to sleep, rather, in another roommate's bedroom. Upon being confronted by the police, he denied sexual contact with the victim and claimed that he blacked out due to drinking too much, doesn't remember anything about the night of the incident. Thanks, Liam. Very observant of you. He was certain that there was no reason his DNA would be on the victim or his clothing. Well, you know what's coming next. However, However, lab tests on the victim's underwear returned DNA profile that, in fact, matched Aaron's, triggering the arrest for sexual abuse. In addition to getting a search warrant to obtain the DNA, police also received court permission to seize his iPhone and search for any photos of the victim or another victim. If convicted of sexual abuse, he could be facing up to 10 years in prison. 546 right now, 55. That's a legitimate question. Cullen Electric, I know.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
F51 at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Going through the stack of stupid. Got some weird ones in the stack of stupid, man. Not that that's unusual, but just this morning seemed to be taking me aback. And, you know, for anybody out there, weirdos, particularly speaking, you know, strange people, and criminals for that matter. Remember the cameras? We live in an Orwellian age. There's a camera everywhere. And if you don't assume when you're in someone else's home that there isn't a camera, you should start using the default assumption that anywhere you go, there's going to be someone filming you. So you don't do things like this outside of the confines of your own home, preferably behind a closed, locked door where no one can see you. We go to Detroit for this one. A home inspector caught pleasuring himself with, of all things, an Elmo doll. And sadly, it's only a misdemeanor count. Charged with two misdemeanor counts. This is Rochester Hills District Court. Kevin Wayne Van Leuven, who's 59 years old, arraigned on charges of aggravated indecent exposure and malicious destruction of property under $200. Yeah, I would say malicious destruction of property is an adequate characterization. Incident happened March 12th, Oxford Township. Homeowners asked to have their property inspected at the request of the buyers. A nursery camera detected movement. So the 22-year-old homeowner checked her phone, whereupon she caught Van Leuven in the act. After he finished pleasuring himself, he returned the doll to its original place. That would be your malicious destruction of property under $200. Court of the Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard, in a statement, just when I think I've seen it all, someone steps up and surprises me with a new level of disturbing actions. Officers questioned about the incident, Van Leuven said that he moved the doll to check an electrical outlet, but made incriminating statements and apologized after being told, hey, dude, we've got you on nursery camera. Judge said you're not allowed to be alone in a home that is not yours. You may not contact the homeowner, and you're required to undergo a mental health evaluation. That the, well, pronouncement of Judge Nancy Ciarnac. Bouchard said in the news release, it's a disgusting reminder to be cautious about who you let in your home. The actions of these homeowners will likely prevent this defendant from going into anybody else's home. Unless, of course, he violates a court order. Hide your Elmo dolls. Former track and field coach who worked with several universities now been accused of tricking female student athletes into sending him nude photos and cyberstalking at least one. 28-year-old Steve Waith of Chicago charged by a criminal complaint with one count of cyberstalking, one count of wire fraud. He worked as a track and field coach at Northeastern University in Boston between October 18 and February 2019. It's alleged that during that time he frequently requested to use the female athletes' cell phones under the pretense of filming their form and practice and at meets. At times he was observed scrolling through those phones. With the allegedly engaged in a scheme to dupe female Northeastern University track and field athletes to sending him nude or semi-nude photos themselves. He contacted the alleged victims through social media, said he found compromising photos of them online, and offered to help get the photos removed from the internet. Anybody who says they can get your photos removed from the internet, I think they're going to be trying to scam you. Once they're out there, yeah, you find me somebody who knows enough about the dark web to go ahead and figure out where that photo is that they're going to get rid of. Anyhow, he allegedly asked for additional nude or semi-nude photos so he could purportedly use them for reverse image searches. Is that like facial recognition software? Officials allege he also cyberstalked one of those female students through a message via social media. Under the premise of an athlete research or body development study, it's alleged that Waith emailed prospective victims using the personas of Katie Janovich or Catherine Svoboda. Emails described a phony study for athletes and request information related to height, weight, diet habits. Emails also include a request for the victims to send photos of themselves in a uniform or bathing suit to show as much skin as possible and suggested that the photos would not be shared or saved. All right, what saddens me most about this is that these young ladies actually were victimized by this guy. Doesn't that sound a little red flaggy? 556, 55 KRCD Talk Station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Got more to talk about, plus Vice Mayor Smitherman coming up at 7:05. I hope you can stick around.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
We need to stand up.
Stand for what you believe.
Stand together.
Stand up and be counted.
It's what Americans do.
55 KRC.
6:05 coming up on 6:06 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Friday Eve. And I hope you can stick around all morning here. Got some great conversation coming up. First off, conversation with you. If you care to call and comment, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, or pound 550 on AT&T phones. Conversation with Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman coming up at 1 hour. We'll talk about the nuisance claim filed against this bar on the banks. Apparently, doesn't sound like a great place to hang out. Underage drinking, patrons dragged out of the bar and left unconscious, numerous bar fights, and according to the Enquirer's reporting, thank you, Sharon Coolidge, a fight so big that downtown's Joe Nuxall Way had to shut down in order for the police to break it up. We'll talk issue three. I talked to issue three yesterday with Rafael Prophet, who's running for mayor. He is in favor of it, one of two of the mayoral candidates that you'll get to choose from in the upcoming primary, along with a vote on issue three. We'll talk about issue three. Rafael is in favor of it, and so is Gabby Begtrup, who is running for mayor and will be on the program coming up at 8:05. So obviously other questions to ask, Gabby, but issue three seems to be a very important one and very interesting, too. If you listen to Rafael yesterday podcast, if you didn't, he was a former firefighter. I guess he retired from the fire department there for decades, and he is still in favor of issue three, in spite of the fact that the firefighters union came out and talked about how devastating this was going to be to the firefighters. We've already heard from Dan Hills from the Cincinnati Police Department on this issue. He was on the program earlier in the week talking about how devastating it would be for the police department. So I wasn't satisfied with Rafael's, suggesting that it was all going to work all right. I will even concede his point that this has been an epic problem for decades, and obviously no one's been able to solve it. I just specifically asked him how $50 million annually moving forward is going to solve it, what specifically was going to be done. And sort of the deafening silence that always comes from politicians when you ask questions about specificity was what I got. So you draw your own conclusions. You'll be able to draw them today after speaking with Gabby at 8:05, followed by Jay Ratliff. Apparently, United Airlines is only going to hire women and people of color, at least for future hires, half of which at least they promise. I personally would just hope United would hire the best pilots. And I don't believe the color of one's skin or one's gender has anything to do with whether or not one is the best pilot to choose from among a pool of pilots. We'll see what Jay has to say about that, along with a comparison of February's international travel. The numbers are down, as you might imagine, with COVID, and how far down they are may shock you. That's coming up at 8:30. 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on AT&T phones. Real quick here, thanks again. Westside Jim Kiefer's name's come up a couple times this morning. I didn't see this one this morning. I'm guessing Joe didn't either because it's a breaking story. Fox 19 reporting this morning, and not that long ago. They updated the story about 10 minutes ago. There are about 5 monkeys on the loose on the west side of the city of Cincinnati. They have been seen swinging in trees at a cemetery. Police confirmed this morning. Police said they reached out to the Cincinnati Zoo to help round them up. St. Joseph's Cemetery, West 8th Street and Enright Avenue. Hang on a second. I'm holding on. Never mind, Joe said. I think he was trying to do something funny. Officers responded to the area at 10 p.m. last night. Resident reported the monkeys. Police speak with Fox 19, say they potentially escaped from a private collection at home. So, if you're missing 5 monkeys, the police would like to have a word with you. Anyway, today's the day Joe Biden will be announcing, and it's already been leaked what he will be announcing. He's set to unveil what they say are going to be 6 executive actions to take away your Second Amendment rights, or at least pare them down substantially. 6 executive actions, and I've been wondering out loud for a while now what the hell Joe Biden thinks he can do by way of telling you which firearms or which components you can and cannot have. I would think, at minimum, that would require the passage of legislation. Executive branch only has so much power, as much as many people would love to turn it into a fascist office where you have a dictator deciding, well, what happens and doesn't happen. See, Trump got accused of that. Biden issues more executive orders in his first 5 minutes in office than any president in U.S. history, dictating terms and conditions left and right, and we all sort of let it stand by. We've talked about this with Joe Janet Napolitano insofar as dropping bombs on countries with whom we have no declaration of war and with whom there is no connection to the authorization to use of military force for Afghanistan, which has been used to bomb other countries for the last 20 years. That's unchecked power, folks. Well, he's going to go after your guns now with this unchecked power, but we'll wait and see exactly what happens. The first action, they say, the first executive order will be a direction to the Department of Justice to propose a rule within 30 days to stop the proliferation of what they like to call ghost guns. Now, for those in the know, you buy what is called an 80% lower. That means it's 80% completed. If it was 100% completed, a lower would constitute a firearm under the regulations. But because it's not completed, it's considered, I guess, a component part, not an actual firearm. You take your 80% lower, you make it 100% lower through machine tooling and some other skills. You attach it to an upper and a barrel and other parts that you can buy independently from, maybe example 22-3 firearms. They sell all of this stuff. And you build your own gun. This happens all the time. I know a lot of guys that have done this. Question remains, though, is whether or not the Justice Department is going to start to classify these, and it's not ghost guns, it's ghost parts, as actual firearms themselves. There's a recent court case that says, no, you can't call a bump stock a firearm. It's not. Second among the six other actions, directing the Justice Department to issue a proposed rule within 60 days, making it clear a device marketed as a stabilizing brace is subject to the requirements of the National Firearms Act. In other words, you've got a it's a stock stabilizing brace. If you have a handgun and you put a stabilizing brace on the grip, it provides you with a stabilizing force because, much like a rifle stock, it, well, holds up against your shoulder and provides a firmer position. They want to say that turns a handgun into a rifle, in essence. They are going to suggest that that brace is in and of itself a firearm. They say it effectively allows a pistol to operate as a short-barreled rifle. And here we're into semantics. And, of course, they point to the Boulder, Colorado grocery store shooting. 10 people dead on that one. It was a Ruger AR-556 pistol. Now, if that had a longer barrel and a regular stock, it would be an AR-15 rifle. But it's not. It's got a much shorter barrel, and it doesn't have that long stock on it. Looks and operates like a rifle if you, of course, use a brace. And, you know, all of this overlooks that it takes a bat-crap insane person to want to mow down and kill a bunch of innocent people that there's no connection to that guy with, whether it's a machine pistol, a real AR-15, a shotgun, or a knife with a car. We had that guy in Capitol, remember, just the other day. Anyway, while he was a candidate, he pledged to reinstate the so-called assault weapons ban, create a voluntary buyback program, and send a bill to Congress to repeal liability protections for gun manufacturers, as well as closing the so-called gun show loophole. He promised to do all that on his first day in office, and it didn't happen, obviously. Rather, he focused on getting that COVID-19 bill passed. Administration officials were emphasizing, though, that the executive actions were just initial steps. And if you listen to what he's planning on doing, he's asking Justice to prepare proposed rules. So you've got a couple of months to give me a proposal. That doesn't do anything. It is merely a proposal. Ultimately, what they do with that, though, seems to be frightening in light of what the direction here. Biden will be joined by Attorney General Merrick Garland today in announcing these actions. Also include directing five federal agencies to make changes to the 26 different programs to direct vital support to community violence intervention programs as quickly as possible. On top of that, one of the other six things apparently he wants to do is a $5 billion stack of money to go to community violence intervention programs over the next 8 years, this under the infrastructure package. Now, much like my conversation with Rafael Prophet, $50 million plus goes to affordable housing. What does that mean? Where's it going to go? And what's it going to do? How is that going to end the affordable housing problem, absent just writing checks to people to cover the cost of rent? I say the same thing about community violence intervention programs. Here, you're a community violence intervention program not-for-profit manager making $300,000 a year. You think that's, you salivate over that. $8 billion, hey, I might get myself a chunk of that. What are you going to do with the money? How are you going to stop and intervene in community violence? That guy that ran over the police officer at the Capitol, killed him, tried to get all stabby with and injured another police officer. He killed the car. How are you going to intervene in something like that? I don't know. Maybe the red flag legislation that Biden will be also pushing today. Now, he's pressing states to enact laws that allow a family member to get a court order barring people from access to firearms. Now, if there's due process involved with this, I have less of a concern over this one than any of them. My concern, though, largely stems from the fact that there appears to be a lack of due process. And when someone takes away your firearm in an ex parte hearing, in other words, a hearing where you haven't been invited to with representation to counsel to defend yourself, they go into a court and they get an injunction, in essence, allowing them to take away your firearm, you're going to have to lawyer up to get it back. And we've talked about this many, many times. That component alone is a tragic reality. If you give the government or authorities too much leeway, they'll abuse their authority and they'll take firearms away from people who shouldn't have them removed. And then that party has to suffer through the retention of a lawyer and a big, fat, giant legal bill. Unless, of course, you find some not-for-profit out there that's willing to represent you for free, and good luck to that. Coming up on 618, 55 KRC, the talk station, I've got to mention Bond Furniture.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
.622 right now, F55 KRC Talk Station. Yeah, more on these executive actions and what else they are doing in an effort to disarm you. It's a frightening, frightening concept. We have, I appreciate him sending me this article this morning, California. And this actually, I think, may work for the gun grabbers, rather than going after the guns, going after the lead ammunition that folks use all the time, shooting ranges and elsewhere. There was a bill introduced in February in California legislature, and they obviously don't like guns in California. AB 3071, sponsored by the Assembly member Kevin Mullen, prohibits the use of ammunition that has not been certified as lead-free at sports shooting ranges and indoor ranges. Also prohibits shooting ranges from selling or giving away ammunition that has not been certified as lead-free. And also, the legislation would require a signature, or signage rather, that lead ammunition is prohibited for use at the facilities. Now, you can see that one going one step further. The absolute outright banning of all things lead. I mean, lead is a poison. It can accumulate in your body. You may have read about that before. But certainly an inexpensive, up until lately, mechanism for use as a bullet. Now, there are non-lead bullets out in the world. Understand they aren't necessarily good for your gun, your firearm, but that's just something from an environmental standpoint that I can certainly see them pushing. Pushing back, however, and I love this, Arizona has a new law that would prohibit federal gun laws violating the Second Amendment. Get a load of this one. Fighting back. We'll call them sanctuary cities. Remember sanctuary cities? Cincinnati's one. We will not help the federal government enforce immigration law. Our local police officers will not use their time or their resources in assisting the federal government to deal with immigration. Now, local law enforcement works with the feds all the time when it comes to other crimes. In fact, the federal government couldn't enforce laws without the help, I would argue, in many cases, of local law enforcement. There's a limited number of federal agents, a finite number. They seemingly have an infinite number of crimes they're charged with pursuing. So they, well, of course, need the help of locals. Local officers run across a federal offense. They can call the feds up and say, hey, we busted this guy doing XYZ. This also constitutes a federal crime. You want a piece of this action. How about gun laws? If you have federal gun laws, you might need local law enforcement to help you enforce them. And that's where this one comes in. Signed into law, Tuesday by Arizona Republican Governor Greg Ducey, ensuring the rights of gun owners are protected from potential overreaching gun laws sought by Joe Biden. The law will prohibit police and sheriff's office from enforcing new federal gun laws. Critics, however, say it will undermine the rule of law. Aww. Is it the rule of law when you have a Second Amendment and the federal government seeks to take it away from you? Seems like it's an enforcement of the rule of law to not facilitate the stealing and erosion of the Second Amendment. Anyway, text of the law reads, the state of Arizona and its political subdivisions are prohibited from utilizing any financial resources or state personnel to administer, cooperate with, or enforce any law, act, order, rule, treaty, or regulation of the federal government that is inconsistent with any law of this state regarding the regulation of firearms. Ha! And good for you. We will not abide. I like that. Now, anybody want to raise their hand or make a comment on whether or not you think Governor DeWine would sign something like this? 626, 55KRC, talk station. I bet you could get it through Columbus, though. The question is whether it lands on the governor's desk, he would actually sign it into law. You know what you should do? Go to Affordable Medical Imaging. If you've got a...
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
KRCD Talk Station. Vice Mayor Smitherman coming up after the top of the hour news. One of the issues we're talking about, of course, is Issue 3. I talked with Rafael Prophet yesterday about that. He's in favor of it. The other mayoral candidate who is in favor of it will be on the program at 8:05 this morning, Gabby Begtrip. And with Rafael being a firefighter, former firefighter, he's with the force for decades, he is in favor of it. And the Firefighters Union now itself is coming out saying that there will be dire consequences if Issue 3 passes. You can't reconcile the two. President Matt Alter, talking about these concerns, interviewed by the Enquirer on that on their podcast, whether or not the organization supports the Affordable Housing Charter Amendment. This is the one that's going to give $50 million plus to the, Affordable Housing Initiative, whatever that is. He said, we're basically treading water. We're wearing floaties, doing what we can to keep our head above water. This just raises the tide. We will be drowning in high seas. He said, it's just too much. He expressed frustration that there wasn't a broader discussion at City Hall and the community leaders before the group began collecting signatures for the ballot initiative. He said, we have to sit down in a room and talk as grown-ups and say, let's just be honest. This is going to impact every service and every department in the city of Cincinnati. That's the same sentiment you get from, yes, the Cincinnati Police Department. See my interview with Dan Hills earlier in the week. Very concerned about Issue 3 and how it's going to gut the police department. Over to Northern Kentucky, Kentucky Judicial Conduct Commission punished, another Northern Kentucky judge. The commission suspended Kenton County District Judge Ann Ruddle without pay for 7 days from April 15th to the 22nd. That what they say are violating three rules in the Code of Judicial Conduct, given the way she handled court proceedings last summer. Ruddle first won election in 1994. She is the chief district judge for Kenton County. According to the court documents, she erred when she did the following. Required defendants in criminal trials to file written demands for jury trials. Made comments to Department of Public Aid advocacy attorneys that were not patient, dignified, and courteous. Suggested an unrepresentative person enter into a plea agreement that, in their words, could be reasonably perceived as coercive. Won't be a suspension hearing or a month-long legal process like there was for the former Kenton County Family Court Judge Dawn Gentry. Ruddle agreed to the suspension and waived formal proceedings, which is how judges are able to appeal the commission's claims. And we have a judge in temporarily blocking an Ohio ban on the use of telemedicine for medication abortions. This suit challenges the constitutionality of the law. A two-week restraining order granted by Hamilton County Judge late Tuesday in the case brought last week by Planned Parenthood against the Ohio Department of Health, among others. Second Ohio abortion law common pleas Judge Allison Hathaway has blocked this week. On Monday, she delayed enforcement of another law that would require fetal remains from surgical abortions to be cremated or buried. This latest decision, though, means the telemedicine abortion ban will not take effect as scheduled on Monday. The court will consider the law's longer-term fate at a hearing on April 19th. It marks the fifth Ohio abortion restriction passed by the state's Republican-led legislature to now be blocked by the courts. Other bans on dilation and evacuation or D&E abortions, abortions in cases where the fetal Down syndrome diagnosis is a factor, and on all abortions after the detection of the first fetal heartbeat, which can occur as early as 6 weeks into pregnancy. So there you go. Another one bites the dust. 6:35 coming up on 6:36. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK or #550 on AT&T phones. If you got something.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Happy Friday Eve. Brian Thomas right here. Glad to have Joe Strecker as my executive producer. And wishing you a very happy day and hoping you call in. If you got a comment, I've got a couple of callers online here. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. And stick around after the top of the hour news. Vice Mayor Smitherman returns. There's a bar down in the Banks that's got some real nuisance problems and has been sued to shut down. Issue 3. And it's been 20 years since the Cincinnati riot. We'll get his thoughts and impressions on the improvements that have been brought about in the city of Cincinnati, as well as the Cincinnati Police Department since 2001. It seems like it was just yesterday, doesn't it? Speaking of phones, let's go to the phones and start with Mike this morning. Mike, happy Thursday to you. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Brian. I don't know if I about a comment about Joe Biden. I've really seen the videos going around online. There's a Catholic priest that pretty much rips into him from the pulpit, and he starts going after the Catholic bishop, saying it's their fault that the reason why we have a Catholic, supposedly Catholic president who's for abortion and for all this stuff. And it's like a 20-minute long video. This guy just keeps going and ripping at Joe Biden about stuff.
Yeah, calling him out. And you know what? Why is it? I'm asking rhetorically, Mike, maybe you have an answer to this question, because I've seen every once in a while a priest or a bishop or maybe a cardinal, rarely, is going to come out and make a pronouncement like that. I've always, what in the hell is with the Catholic Church? They won't stand up for their own dogmatic and doctrinal principles. They go around and let Nancy Pelosi and Joe Biden proudly declare their commitment to Catholicism and how awesome they are in terms of how great. And then they're out there advocating for killing babies, which is a violation of Catholic doctrine and dogma. You can't do that if you're Catholic. It's against the rules. And the Pope, as liberal as this Pope is, he hasn't changed the rules on that yet. You know? Where's the backbone?
And he brings up the Mitt Romney as an example. Like, if Mitt Romney was smoking cigars and drinking coffee and all that stuff, the Mormons would be like, oh, no, he's not one of us. But the Catholics are not saying a word.
Yeah, they aren't. And, you know, one must observe, I've seen statistics, we all know how polls and statistics can be, but many people are what they describe as, like with a lot of religions, cafeteria Catholics or cafeteria style. You have a whole host and plate of doctrinal dogmatic principles, rules, regulations, what it means, sacraments, all that. You believe in some of them, but you choose not to believe in or follow others. It's just a question of your own personal choice. Now, I don't know what the pronouncement is from the Catholic Church on that type of Catholic, the cafeteria Catholic, as it's been come to call. Maybe that's a pejorative term for you. I'm not here to insult Catholics, but I would say this to any religion. If it's fundamental to your doctrinal and dogmatic principles, you should be calling out, like this guy did, those who are out there, particularly in elected office, calling them out and condemning them. And perhaps, as the case is with the Catholic Church, why not deny them the sacrament of communion? If they're not toeing the line and they're not advocating and perhaps even proselytizing on behalf of your religion, how can you allow them to benefit from putting your religious name after theirs went out on the campaign trail? They're using you in a huge way. I'm not Catholic, but I mean, you hear it in my voice. It's one of those moments of anger. This is a point of, I would hope, significance for devout members of the Catholic Church. Yet the leaders of the church themselves, the person in the front of the room or the person above them in the hierarchy, or even the cardinal that's controlling the entire local area or region, they're definitely silent. Where's the cardinal that runs the general area around San Francisco and California calling out the likes of Nancy Pelosi? The hypocrisy. Silence. Deafening silence. Bobby, welcome to the show and happy Thursday.
Hey, Brian, I'm going to change the subject just for a second.
Sorry.
Probably because I caught the first part. But anyways, if we're talking about judges and laws, I just want to kind of ask a question. Maybe somebody can do a skit on it or something at some point. But we got people who on January 6th are still sitting in prison. One guy had his skull crushed and is blind now because of what the guards did to him in the prison. Now, if that's considered insurrection, what they did on January 6th, when Kavanaugh was being brought into the Supreme Court, I remember clearly that the leftists stormed the Capitol, cornered our senators in elevators, and chased them into their offices. When's those charges going to be levied?
Well, I understand the rhetorical nature of your question, Bobby, and I think about it in terms of this whole January 6th riot, or whatever you want to call it. Pointless gesture, actually. I was screaming that at the TV when it was happening, but nothing in comparison to what the left did to the halls of the sacred halls in terms of bombing them back in the 70s. The Weather Underground planted a whole bunch of bombs and blew the place up a few times. And if they were nice enough at least to call in the bomb and let everybody know that they were going to be blowing up a bomb so no one would die, but when you're blowing up the Capitol building as opposed to, you know, breaking in and causing a ruckus, I'll let you decide which is worse. But explosives, high explosives, deadly potentially. Yeah. Appreciate the call, Bobby. We'll let that rhetorical question hang out there. It's like a piece of God. This whole thing passes all human understanding. 646 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. CME pipelining, simple to call CME.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
.651, 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Thursday to you. Vice Mayor Smith, then at the top of the hour news. Got multiple subject matter to talk with him, and I'm looking forward to that as I always do. Looking forward to getting Richard's call here for a moment here. Richard, hang on. I got an email from someone, a Facebook message, instant message, and I have to mention the person. I don't know if he wants his name mentioned. Doesn't matter. He said, this abortion thing. He said, funny thing is 50% of your Catholics will vote Democrat, yet the very next day they'll go to the church that has 100 white crosses in the yard representing those children killed by abortion, yet have no problem supporting the church that plants the crosses, but they vote pro-abortion. He says it's stunning. That's true, but allow this, that, you know, we'll just go, we're all sinners, and, you know, okay, and that the parishioner who votes Democrat, in spite of the fact they're pro-abortion, they've decided that all of the other issues, political issues, outweigh that component of faith. So while I understand and I'm totally against abortion, but I hate what the other guy stands for, and I'm willing to concede that point in order to get a guy who's on my side of the ledger for other things. Fine. Can a priest, bishop, cardinal, or pope do that, though? Are they allowed to put their political motivations and the idea that, well, we want more socialist policies in, or we want bigger government control, or we want a Green New Deal, and therefore I, as a priest, a bishop, or cardinal, am willing to keep my mouth shut and not point out the hypocrisy of supporting someone who supports and pushes for pro-abortion legislation because they're on my side on everything else? I don't know. Not being a Catholic and not knowing the interior rules on that, it sounds awful to me, though, that there is silence on the matter. It draws attention to it. It's like the 800-pound gorilla in the room. It's like, dude, wait a second. I thought we were supposed to be against abortion, and yet you haven't said anything to our local politicians. You haven't appealed to their better senses. You haven't addressed them about violating so profoundly church principles that they should be excommunicated or denied communion or something. You ever try persuading them a little bit? No, I don't see it ever happening. Hey, Richard, thanks for calling. Welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, Brian. I called in the other day. We talked about the Major League Baseball moving the All-Star game, and I asked, has anybody asked Bob Castellini about this? And I still haven't gotten an answer to that, but I did see an article last night. I'm sure you saw it too. You're as well read as I could possibly imagine, where the Major League Baseball owners say that they were blindsided by this decision and that Rob Manfred made this decision after consulting with LeBron James, Stacey Abrams, and Al Sharpton. Well, number one, LeBron James doesn't play baseball. Number two, Stacey Abrams is now all of a sudden have second thoughts. And number three, Al Sharpton has absolutely no credibility whatsoever. So I think the next logical step is, when are the owners going to get together and say, goodbye, Rob Manfred, you're gone?
I agree completely on that. I have the information. Yes, he did meet with Stacey Abrams and Al Sharpton. And they are the ones that told him the players would be boycotting the game if they didn't move. And I thought, really? Did the players respond to a survey sent out by Stacey Abrams and Al Sharpton? Seriously. And that he took them seriously, that he even listened to them. That she's not even in elected capacity. And Al Sharpton, well, his credibility undermined by his very first action, and that was out screaming about Tawana Broadley. That's how he made a name for himself, and he's been shaking people down ever since. Good to hear you from you, Richard. Good questions. We got time for Corey's question, Joe. Real fast. Corey, you're on. Welcome to the morning show.
Hey, morning, Brian. As far as Biden's gun grabs, Trump opened the door for this with that bump stock ban. They call them parts, machine guns,
yep.
And I just want to remind everybody of that. But I think one solution could be good luck in Hamilton County, but if the sheriff start deputizing the citizens, as we know, deputies and police officers are exempt from every gun law in the book, for the most part.
So, I guess which direction you think it's going to go, Corey?
I think it's going to stand, because look how long it took for the federal court in Cincinnati to strike down, or at least put on pause, the bump stock ban. I think it's going to be allowed to go through, and the Supreme Court's going to refuse to hear the case because they've showed that they are cowards already, and I don't see them taking this up.
Well, I got my popcorn out. I'm waiting on that one. I don't know necessarily draw the same conclusion, but we'll see. We actually get good court opinions elsewhere. And I would argue the case law of late has gone the direction in favor of protecting the Second Amendment rather than eviscerated. Coming up on 6:56, Vice Mayor Smithman after the news. I hope you can stick around.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Let me tell you something.
Let your voice be heard.
This country is worth fighting for.
Your voice on 55 KRC.
It's 7:06 at 55 KRC, the talk station. My name is Brian Thomas, and I am so pleased, as I always am, to talk with Vice Mayor of the City of Cincinnati, Christopher Smithman. Welcome back to the program, Christopher. I hope you and your family are well.
Hey, thank you, Brian. I'm always glad to be on with you.
Always good to have you on. Voice of common sense and reason, and maybe someone who can shed a little bit of light on this Gala Park lawsuit. City filed a lawsuit. I'm laughing at the details. I guess it isn't too funny because there's all kinds of bar fights and drunken disorderly conduct, and I guess they got busted for serving underage individuals. I see that the city filed suit. Aren't there... Don't the liquor license come subject to certain rules and regulations? And isn't the liquor commission charged with withdrawing a license or taking away the license to serve alcohol if they find violations?
Yeah, that's very true. I'm the chair of law and public safety. I preside over liquor license hearings in the city of Cincinnati. You know, it is a privilege, as you have indicated, by the state of Ohio for someone to have a liquor license. You know, that those hearings will begin on the 13th of April. So I'll be very cautious to bring public comment because I'm presiding over those hearings that will be happening. And I know that there will be more than one establishment that the Cincinnati Police Department and our law department will be challenging those liquor licenses. But 30,000 feet in the air, you know, indicating that, yeah, it's a privilege to have the liquor license. And we've got to have establishments across our city as COVID-19 is subsiding and people are going back to their daily lives.
Yeah.
That they are respecting the quality of life issues for their neighbors. And so, you know, neighborhoods, many of them, you know, embrace restaurants and bars in their neighborhoods. But what they don't want to have happen is people pouring out in the streets at 2 a.m., urinating, fighting, shooting. You know, destroying their property, blocking their driveways. These are very common sense things that neighbors demand from partners who are doing business in their neighborhoods.
I guess, and I know there are residences on the banks, the higher rise. I don't know if they're condos or apartments, but other than that, I mean, it's not a real heavily residential populated area, the banks. I just, and it's also city council made it a DORA, this open liquor consuming area, like 84 acres worth. So those problems that you mentioned seem to come along with people milling about and drinking. I mean, that's they go hand in hand.
Yeah, well, we'll sort through the facts on the floor council, like what exactly is happening. But clearly, you know, by law, we cannot have establishments serving underage people alcohol. And
absolutely,
I can tell you in past cases, we have had restaurants that have come before law and public safety where the underage serving has occurred. The person then leaves that establishment and is then in a car accident.
Right.
So, you know, when establishments have the expectation that, number one, they don't overserve anybody. So whether they're, you know, 21, 25, 50, 80, they're not supposed to overserve someone.
Right.
But they specifically are not supposed to be serving someone who is underage.
You know,
so that kind of opens it a whole nother book. And I just don't know the facts. I'm going to wait for that, for the presentation from the police department. But typically what happens, Brian, is our teams will send in investigators. There tends to be a long runway of facts that they've been looking and investigating an establishment, and then they unveil those facts on the floor council.
All right. And I did not practice in, study, or otherwise research the laws relating to running a liquor-serving establishment when I was a practicing attorney. I'm still licensed, but I don't purport to know it. But what I'm staring at is a couple of things. This place obviously is a problem, but serving someone who is underage, I have seen firsthand, and I know from firsthand knowledge, that it is very easy to acquire a fake ID that suggests you have a driver's license and that you are of the drinking age. Quite often it'll look like, you know, a driver's license that issued from the state of Michigan or Florida. And local people don't always know what those look like. And when you see a fake one, it says right here, Florida issued. It's got a little hologram, says you're 21. All right, you get in. If that person got it online, and you can, How is a restaurant to be held responsible for that? Isn't that, wouldn't that be a legitimate defense? Man, they gave me an ID.
Well, I think that that's a fair scenario.
If that's what happens. Yeah,
if that's what happens. Sometimes what we see are there are no checks happening.
Okay, that's different.
That, you know, our teams are in there, they walk up to the bar, and they order a drink, and they are served. And
okay.
They're served multiple times without the request of the ID.
Fair enough.
Now, I can also say a funny to you.
Yeah.
There was a period of time, you know, in my life that I would be carded from time to time. And I remember going through this like, man, why are you carding me? Then I got to a point in my life where I was like, why are you carding me? I want you to card me. Why aren't
I know.
You carding me? You know what I mean?
So I know.
I'm now at that point now, like, somebody please card me.
Yeah, and, you know.
I will tip you. I will tip you if you say, hey, can I see your ID?
I know.
Don't call me sir. I don't want to hear sir.
Now, you still look pretty gosh darn young. I know how old you are. You're younger than me, but, you know. That's the stupidity of laws like this. You can hold someone 100% accountable. They end up having to card everybody. You get a 96-year-old woman grabbing a six-pack or a bottle of wine over to a convenience store, like, I got to see your ID. I'm like, are you kidding me? But in these days of masks, Christopher, I've heard that children, young people are now putting on their masks and making themselves have the appearance of an elderly person in order to try to get around that. So anyway, whether or not that's right. Now, the other question I've got, and I feel sorry for bar owners on some level, to the extent they're going to be held accountable or liable for what is called being overserved. Now, if someone is visibly impaired, if there is no question, they're staggering, their speech is slurred, eyes are glossy, all the indications of someone who's already drunk, you serve them fine. The objective indicators are there. But Christopher, at age 55, I've been around drinkers a lot my whole life. Mm-hmm. And I know some who can be way overserved that do not indicate or show any indication that they're blasted out of their mind drunk already. They can order and calmly say, yeah, give me another gin and tonic or whatever to bar. And the bartender, there's no way they could know it. But mm-hmm. if you know that person well enough and you know how much they've been drinking because you've watched it over the course of the evening, you know that they shouldn't be served anymore. How does a bar owner ever deal with that kind of quandary? I mean,
first, let me share with you the testimony that I've seen in the past. Our law enforcement, I've never seen them bring that scenario.
Okay.
What they will bring is someone falls off their stool.
Okay.
Someone is laying down in the middle of the bar.
So,
and then a man is picking this woman up who's like 125 pounds and takes her out. And then there's some sexual assault that happens. I mean, there, you know, the things that we see are grotesque, where it is quite obvious that a rational person would say this person is impaired and you should not be serving them another drink.
That makes sense.
I haven't seen that scenario. It typically is somebody is obviously impaired.
Okay, I worry about it because
with a joint smoking in the middle of the restaurant
or the
bar, they also then are drinking. They're falling all over the place.
Yeah.
You know,
and I had
like,
a,
why
I
are
a,
you serving them the eighth? You know, shot or whatever you're doing. Like, what is that?
I understand. So I guess the point is, in your experience and as chair of the Law and Public Safety Committee and as your experience over your as a council member, you haven't seen any abuses by the authorities playing fast and loose with what underserved means or what underage means. Bottom line is, they're busting and they're citing bars that have clear violations of these.
I promise you that, sometimes I look at our police department and I go, you guys are being way too liberal. I'm just looking, you know.
Yeah.
But what they really are trying to do, from what I've seen, is err on the side of being incredibly cautious.
Cautious.
They work, say, hey, can we put together, you know, a neighborly agreement between your establishment and the neighborhood? We go through lengthy discussions with the owner prior to going after someone's license. There's typically a long runway here before the police department in Cincinnati says, hey, we just can't do this. Now, what will bring it to a head is someone gets shot. We have a dead body outside in the parking lot, you know, or a woman is raped in the parking lot, you know, or there's a shooting inside of the bar.
Yes.
You know what I mean? These are things that when we're dealing with things on the floor of council, things have gotten out of control and there are things that are grotesque. that the rational person listening at the set of facts say, it's a privilege for you to have this liquor license. We're going to object to it, send you up to the state of Ohio, and let them sort out the facts.
Fair enough. At least due process is involved. And if to the extent that the scenarios that I have suggested are true or are there or involved, then they'll be able to make their case that, you know, how am I supposed to determine an absolute perfect forged license and realize the kid's underage when they give me the documentation? Not that scenario going on, according to Vice Mayor Smithman, and according to the complaint against Gala Bar, which is repeated flagrant, they say, violations of liquor laws and a bunch of occasions where patrons were overserved. So seems pretty cut and dry. Issue 3 sounds like a problem to me. Sounds like a problem to Dan Hills, the FOP union. It's a problem for the firefighters union, not a problem for mayoral candidate Rafael Profit. I want to find out what Vice Mayor Smitherman has to say about Issue 3 coming up next. But first, I want to mention 22-3 Firearms, located on .720 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Hope you're having a very happy Thursday. Coming up, we're going to hear from mayoral candidate Dr. Gabby Begtrip, the other of, I believe, this total of 6 who are running for mayor of the city of Cincinnati. You're going to have a chance to pick a couple of them in the primary. He is in favor of Issue 3. Issue 3, Vice Mayor Christopher Smithman, you and I have talked about this one before. In a nutshell, every year, baseline $50 million, and then as you adjust for inflation, that number continues to go up every year into forever in terms of the future. $50 million up front out of the general fund needs to go to what they call affordable housing. I don't know necessarily, definitionally speaking, what that means to the folks pushing for Issue 2. I asked Rafael Profit yesterday about what exactly will be done with that money, and as a mayoral candidate, I thought he might know, but he doesn't. At least I didn't get the impression he knew. Do you have any idea where this money would go? And, of course, I want your reaction to the impact on the budget.
So, one, I don't support it, and I encourage citizens who have followed my political career for many years to consider my position here humbly and reject it and vote no on it. It would be devastating to the city budget. Our operating budget is about $441 million. This proposal would take $50 million in perpetuity, turn it over to an 11-member body that is unelected, and no specific requirements for a specialty from any of the people serving. So the board is very, very vague, and the money would essentially cause the city to reduce its basic service objectives for the citizens. So police, fire, sanitation. I would say that we will not be able to pick up trash on a weekly basis in the city of Cincinnati if this proposal passes.
Whoa.
It would be devastating. I would say this, that's not an exaggeration. I would say sanitation pickup would go to every other week in the city of Cincinnati.
People
who are supporting this, I want to believe that they're coming from a good place.
Of course.
I support affordable housing. I know you support affordable housing. When the definition of area median income, $60,000, this is what HUD says, of a family of four. But the reality of it is the government is not the lead on providing affordable housing. We are a partner, and we are in the business of delivering basic services. So what I say to that is we need private dollars leveraging the city dollars in order to expand the amount of affordable housing. A lot of people who are supporting affordable housing do not understand the model that investors who are bringing money into the city of Cincinnati for housing, this simple fact, need to make money, meaning they have to have an ROI on those private dollars that are coming in. What the city needs to do is have some pot of money set aside that allows those margins to work so that those private investors, we attract those dollars here, not to Columbus, not to Indianapolis. Well, we're competing across the United States of America. But we are not the lead. We can't just say we're going to put $300 million in affordable housing and think that that is not going to impact dramatically our ability to deliver the basic services that citizens are paying for across our 52 neighborhoods.
Well,
vote no on issue three.
You're never going to get anybody to invest in the city if they're not going to pick up the garbage for every couple of weeks. I can only imagine how bad things would get.
It's a bad idea.
I think that's the
bigger picture of it. And when you see firefighters saying they don't support it and police, and you see
all of the unions are against this, right? Everybody. They know that it's going to cut into their margins. It's going to cut into their take.
I mean, when do you have, you know, every political party, charter committee, Republicans, Democrats, independents, every single union in the city of Cincinnati, all coming out holding press conferences on the steps of City Hall saying, citizens, we support affordable housing, but not this way.
It's the wrong plan.
This is the wrong plan.
Well, it cracks me up. You're looking for, you know, investors, outside dollar resources to address this problem. Isn't it interesting that some of the taxes that are associated with, or the costs associated with building a new development downtown, means money's going to go to the streetcar? If we didn't have a streetcar, you could say money needs to go from this project to affordable housing, couldn't you?
Yes.
Okay. And how about the Hale Foundation money? That's about $1 million a year. They could get some, you know, satisfaction, relief, and maybe support their mission by helping find folks affordable housing with their $1 million contribution annually to the streetcar. There's another source of money, Christopher. We just need to get rid of that streetcar, don't we?
Listen, we could have invested $94 million at that point that we spent in debt building the 3.5 miles. There was a choice that was made. And what's wild about it is some of the same people who supported the streetcar, right, are also supporting this amendment. And so there's this lack of financial literacy at times.
Amen.
When we're trying to have conversations with citizens about what we can and cannot do financially. It's just very, very bad public policy, and it's why I've asked independents who support me, those who have voted for me, to show up in the primary. The problem is primary voting tends to be very low and very thin. So the fear is that citizens are going not to show up on May the 4th. Early voting has already happened, and that we will not have the numbers that we need of citizens to show up and reject issue 3. I would say absolutely vote against it. We've got to defeat it.
Amen. Don't go away, Christopher. I know you have an update on PG, interestingly enough, and it's been 20 years since the Cincinnati riot. I want to get your thoughts and impressions on whether or not there have been improvements in these, generally in the city of Cincinnati, as well as the Cincinnati Police Department. It's 731, 55KRC, the talk station. It is Thursday, and a happy one to you. Brian Thomas here. Always good to talk to Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman about the issues that are going on in the world. And 20 years since the Cincinnati riot, let's hold on for that for a second, because although it wasn't on my list of topics to talk with you about, I understand you have a PG Sittenfeld update? We all know PG struggling with some criminal allegations that have been levied against them in federal court. What's the word, Christopher?
Well, first, let me humbly extend my condolences to the Sittenfeld family for the loss of their father and grandfather and husband in the last month. Having said that, citizens know that he has been suspended from counsel. What that means is he's still being paid, but at any point he could resign. And so a Councilwoman Keating has been appointed to his seat in a temporary status. That is, that word temporary is very, very important. That is the same thing for Councilmember Gooden. In Councilmember Keating's case, if we were to wake up and Councilmember Sittenfeld were to resign, there then would be a discussion about who has the appointment power to her seat. The city has taken the position that Councilwoman Keaton, who has now made her trustees of her seat, her designees, Councilmember Gooden, Smitherman, and Sunderman, believes that those are the three people that will make the decision about who takes her seat. The Democrats will probably take the city to court and say that Councilmember Silbach, Councilmember Young, and Councilmember Mann, who are Councilmember Sittenfeld's
designees
make the decision for her seat. And so watch for this very, very closely. If Councilmember Sittenfeld were to decide he was going to resign, that the appointments that Judge Winkler from the probate court has made are only temporary appointments. In Councilmember Gooden's situation, I am the trustee for Councilmember Jeffrey Pastor for that seat. So if Councilmember Pastor were to wake up and say he's resigning, I have already publicly said that I will appoint Councilmember Gooden to the seat because I am the only person on the committee that makes that decision. Ooh. I support Councilwoman Keating. I can say publicly that I will vote to reappoint her to the seat if there is any movement by Councilmember Sittenfeld to resign. But we should be watching that very, very closely.
Resignation has always been an option for him, given where he is and what's going on. Are there rumblings that that's actually going to happen, or is this just sort of letting everybody know in advance that there will be undoubtedly a controversy if he does resign?
I think there are a couple of things that are happening. One, the investigation on council is not over. Meaning what I am hearing, what I am seeing, is that, you know, the men of the and women of the Federal Bureau of Investigation are still knocking on doors and asking questions.
Huh.
So I don't believe the investigations, the special prosecutor or the FBI's investigation into specifically this city council is over. And so you look for there could be more legal action against this council. That would trigger, if there is, right, if a member of council is removed or is arrested or is required to step down, it would put tremendous pressure, if that person were in the same party, on Councilmember Sittenfeld to resign immediately, because they would then lose the majority of council.
Wow.
This is a very, very big deal, and I'm highlighting it for you and your listening audience. So if you hear that Councilmember P.G. Sittenfeld is resigning, it is as much a chess move from the Democratic Party, because we've never had a situation where this many members of council have been arrested and indicted for federal charges. And so as we move into this primary, that's why this election is so important for citizens to hear my voice and take action. Go to the Board of Elections and cast your votes for the mayor's race. Make sure you are never voting for anyone who has had any symbolism of corruption. We must get it at its root. That is for council. That is for mayor. And also there are some charter amendments on the ballot on May the 4th that people can early vote on now, that I encourage from Sunderman and from myself, that we encourage citizens to adopt, that will begin to get at this issue around the corruption that has happened at City Hall.
Well, you can stick around for another segment. I wanted to get your impressions and thoughts about 20 years since the riots, but maybe you can do a quick thumbnail sketch of the charter amendments that you'd like my listeners and the residents of the city of Cincinnati to vote for. Pause. We'll continue with Vice Mayor Christopher Smithman after I mention the great roofers at Fasten Pro Roofing. I don't want you to get ripped off. I consider each and every one of you my friends, and you listen to the program, whether you believe with me or are aligned with me politically or not. Getting ripped off is against my judgment, my morals, my values. And there are people who are so unscrupulous out in the world. And it's 7:40 right now, F55 KRCD Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with Vice Mayor Christopher Smithman. Speaking of mayor things, Gabby Bagtrip, our Bagtrip's going to be up after the top of the hour news, running for mayor, one of the six folks that are, and one of the two of six, I believe, that is for issue three. We already talked with Vice Mayor Smithman. He is adamantly opposed to issue three. So are the unions. So are people of all political stripes. It's the one, Christopher, on that one, it's the one time I've seen more bipartisanship over something in years. I mean, years that it's been sort of like divided. The Republicans are on one side, Democrats are another. There's never going to be agreement. This is a beautiful bipartisan opposition. So one can only hope that everybody listens to you and everyone else on that one. And moving on, though, let's talk about, you mentioned a couple other charter amendments before we get to the 20-year anniversary of the riots and what's happened since. The other couple of amendments you wanted folks to support, Christopher?
So, yes, sir. Councilmember Sunderman and Smitherman, myself, we have two charter amendments, and they essentially deal with four issues. One, special prosecutor in times like this where someone is arrested and indicted on federal crimes, and no changing of your designation while you are in the middle of being indicted. So we had members of counsel who were indicted who then attempted to change their designations. We thought that was bad. Also raising the issues of ethics training as a requirement for counsel, and then allowing the counsel to organize itself, meaning seven members of counsel could then remove a member of counsel for being federally indicted, not for a misdemeanor, not for an OVI, but an indictment from the federal government. It could require that city council meet and determine those facts. Doesn't mean they will move in that direction, but a vote of seven of the nine could remove a member of council. Those are some examples of what is in those two charter amendments that I encourage citizens who are voting, which we all should be voting. We should have a high voter turnout to adopt both of those charter amendments. So that's that. And then the 20-year piece, you know, I think coming out of this, there are a lot of thank yous, meaning people like Chief Stryker, who was the chief at the time, who really changed the direction of the Cincinnati Police Department. It was not an easy decision on his part, so he gets a thank you. I think people like Mrs. Irish Rowley, I think Reverend Damon Lynch, Jim Klingman, the Baptist Ministers Conference. There were a lot of people that were under fire here. The FOP at that time really coming together. Saul Green out of Detroit. The council members, it was a 5-4 vote. I know John Crenley was one of those who voted yes for us to really deal with this and adopt the collaborative agreement. So there were a lot of people 20 years ago who had a lot on the line that ultimately has placed the city of Cincinnati ahead of most police departments across the United States of America. And it's why many of them are calling us, are visiting us, are asking us. We thank your sister for her service to the Cincinnati Police Department. We are a diverse police department. We are incredibly progressive. I hear police departments banning chokeholds as an example. I mean, that is something we have absolutely banned and gotten rid of long, 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 long time ago. And so we are a very progressive police department. We have a great chief and Chief Isaac, a great command staff. I think we have the position here to maybe even have the first female police chief here in the city of Cincinnati coming up soon. So the rank and file, there's work that we have to do. I would say the word is continuous improvement for the Cincinnati Police Department, which they continue to do. It is not defund the police. These are two very big differences. And it takes me back to issue three.
Yeah.
That I fear that the motivation at some level of issue three by saying, let's take $50 million and in perpetuity move it over into this 11-member board is a backdoor way to defund our police department. They are not deserving of it, and I think citizens should know that this could be the motivation of some who are pushing this affordable housing amendment that is bad public policy for the citizens of Cincinnati.
Well, even if it is not their hidden motivation, and, you know, I go back to my interview yesterday with Rafael Provin. I mean, this isn't about defunding police. So let's just say it isn't. The practical, real, genuine effect will be to cut the city of Cincinnati Police Department's budgets.
Yeah.
I heard specifically from you, we're going to cut the garbage service. I heard specifically from Dan Hills, the areas within the police department that will be affected. We are already running short on officers, Christopher, and it's difficult, apparently, to fill a class of potential recruits because no one wants to be a police officer anymore because everyone's unloading a heap of crap on them every single day.
That is correct. It is not fair, I think, to say that this amendment would not reduce our Cincinnati police officers when we cannot have a recruit class and the attrition, as you've identified, is very, very high, meaning we're going to probably lose 40 to 50 officers this year to just retirement. So if we bring on 40 in a recruit class, and that's if, as you've indicated, we can get 40 in a recruit class, we are just staying at break even. We clearly need to get our complement back up above 1,000. This would be devastating to the Cincinnati Police Department. So I am confident in telling the voters this would be a negative impact on the Cincinnati Police Department.
Well,
and so for people to say that it's not a defund, right, it's not accurate. This absolutely would be in a backdoor way, defunding not only the police, but
yes.
the fire department and the sanitation department, and all city workers' jobs are on the line if this matter passes.
Wow. Well, I guess I just kind of wonder if this passes during the primary, what impact that's going to have on the upcoming slate of like 9,000 people running for council. My Lord, Christopher, that's just even harder
to
comprehend.
We have to sort it out, Brian. I mean, we just, you know, people cannot go so far in their public policy. I support affordable housing, and I have supported it. We bring on about the city, on our dollars, we leverage about 350 units per year. So in the last 2 years, we brought on about 700. CMHA, I just was at a ribbon cutting where in Evanston, it's called The Evanston, they brought on 100 themselves, our biggest partner, CMHA. So this is not just a city of Cincinnati issue with affordable housing. It's a county issue. And so our county partners are working on affordable housing. So, but to act as if we're doing nothing is disingenuous, meaning the city leaders, the county leaders are doing what we can do with the resources that we have. What we are saying here is that we want to pick up your trash. If you call 911, we want to respond to your house with police and firefighters. When the snow comes, we want to plow your streets. We want to deliver salt. We cannot do that if $50 million per year is put over in a 11-member board with no accountability. I'm very interested in listening to your next segment to see if the candidate has an understanding of our budget, and meaning can speak to the budget itself and its impact, and then explain to the voters how that gap is closed. It's one thing to say, let's move $50 million over, but then say, okay, how do we close that gap and continue to deliver the basic services? If you're a serious candidate for mayor, you've got to be able to answer those questions.
Well, and let's face it, Christopher, and I pointed this out yesterday with Rafael, I pointed it out a million times on the program, 80% of the general fund comes from what? The earnings tax. Two-thirds of that is generated by people who don't live inside the city. No one, to my knowledge, has yet done some sort of number-crunching analysis, which would still be speculation, to determine how many of those people will actually be returning to the city of Cincinnati and therefore subject to the earnings tax. I'm telling you, in this post-COVID-19 world, there's going to be a lot fewer of them, just based upon my personal experience, because it already happened at our house. My wife's working from home permanently. It works out great. People love it, you know? And if you don't have to go into work in the city, why would you want to? If you're getting your job done, you can Zoom, conference, telecommute, whatever, and you're still doing 100% of your work, then, well, great. You don't have a dry cleaning bill anymore. You don't have a gasoline bill, a parking bill. You're not shopping at the local restaurants and stores anymore, and that sucks for all those folks, but it's a reality. There's going to be even less money in the future going into the coffers.
That is true.
So
everything you said is true. And why pay $25, $30 a square foot when someone can work out of their living room?
And
so clearly you're gonna have businesses that are gonna say, hey, COVID-19 was horrible, but it has made us readjust our entire model.
Yeah.
And by the way, we kinda like the model where we're able to bring down our footprint and still be productive. And so, you know,
it's amazing.
The technology, this is going to be a major shift, and I think as you're talking about it, our economy has shifted forever. It will never be the same, you know, post-COVID-19.
Yeah, for good or for bad. It's the reality. Christopher Smitherman, Vice Mayor of the City of Cincinnati.
Thank you so much, Brian.
My pleasure.
I appreciate you, brother. All right, people can follow me on Twitter at VoteSmitherman.
Much love to you and your family, my friend. We'll talk soon.
Brother.
750 right now, 55 Care City Talk Station. Loan One Mortgage.
Not the Republican Party versus the Democrat Party.
Talking about what matters.
It's the Republican Party versus an organized crime syndicate.
55 KRC, the talk station.
Coming up on 8:06 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station, a beautiful morning out there. We're going to get some rain today, but that's all right. Can kind of use it. Brian Thomas here. Happy to welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show. Somebody else who's running for mayor. Got a six of them out there. We talked to Rafael Prophet yesterday. Today, I'd like to welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show. I certainly appreciate him joining us and telling my listeners a little bit about him. Gabby Begtrip. Gabby, it's a pleasure to have you on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Welcome for the first time and hopefully not for the last.
Thanks. It's good to be here. Good morning to everyone listening.
Now, obviously, you are appreciative of the concept of name recognition. And I think, for example, everyone seems to know Aftab Perival's name because he's run for about every single office that's out there since he's shown up. But he's got a lot of name recognition. Dr. Yeah. Gabby Begtrip, how are you going to change the dynamic right now? You never ran for public office before, from what I can tell. You have a PhD in physics, and you're an entrepreneur. You've started businesses, obviously, and I love the fact that you gave credit to yourself first and foremost as a father and husband. But what are you going to do? How are you going to get your name out there with this large field and a rather confusing slate of council candidates as well?
Yeah, well, first we got to make it through May, so I'm not too worried about the council candidates. There's no question, Brian. I mean, if people want another career politician, they've got plenty of choices, and they can choose between them. If somebody wants somebody who actually has leadership experience, who's worked large budgets, I've written $20 billion budgets in Congress. The only thing you left out there was I spent 3 years as a policy advisor to Congresswoman Gabrielle
Right.
Gifford.
Sorry. But go ahead.
We'll get it. But, someone who has leadership experience, policy experience, and is actually looking to solve the problems in front of Cincinnati, not just run for another office and use this as some sort of stepping stone or resume builder. We got to get the word out. So here's the thing. I'm actually out there talking to people. I have personally knocked on 2,000 doors in Cincinnati. I'm going to knock on thousands more. I'm the only candidate, as far as I can tell, that's talking to anybody. I've yet to talk to a single person at a door in Cincinnati who's heard from another candidate, because they all take it for granted. They're running on their laurels. They say, the whole reason I got in this was I saw these candidates all announced the same way. They said, you know my name, and it's my turn to be mayor. And not one of them talked about solving any of the problems. They didn't talk about the systemic inequality. They didn't talk about recovering from the pandemic. They didn't talk about the big budgetary issues in front of our city. They just said, it's my turn, gimme, gimme, gimme. And I think we're tired of that. We have the most corrupt city hall we've had in 100 years. We're in the New York Times for being a corrupt city instead of a city that's leading and growing. And I want to fix that. So we're out there. I appreciate you having me on. We're getting coverage. We're talking to people. And you're going to hear a lot about Gabby Begtrip in the next 4 weeks.
All right. Let's. I see that I'll tell my listeners your website is VoteGabby, VoteGavi.com. There's you can information about him, the candidate, his vision, getting involved. And I think you have to agree that the campaign positions, you're desirous of investing in small business. You said, get City Hall working again, build an equitable, livable city. They're generic concepts, but there aren't specific ideas associated with how you hope to accomplish with them. And you also invite people who are visiting your website to maybe make suggestions. For example, investing in small business. You are an entrepreneur. You started two businesses, WaveTech and then, Ekreen Systems? Did I get those right?
Yeah.
Now, what did the government do for you that you couldn't have done without them to get those businesses started? And are you going to apply that to some sort of concept that you have in the back of your mind in terms of helping small businesses in the city?
Yeah, great question. I'm glad to get into the issues. And so let's talk about starting a business here in Cincinnati. My first business was actually in Covington. And I talk about the greater Cincinnati region a lot because the reality is it's all one economy, and Cincinnati is the beating heart of a 2 million person region. And, my company in Covington, our employees, we're in Covington, but even if you have a company in Covington or Blue Ash or Norwood, half your employees are going to live in the city. Their spouses are going to work in the city. They're going to spend money in the city. We need to be working together to build our economy. So let's talk about specifics. Right now, working with City Hall for your business is terrible.
Yep.
It's absolutely Byzantine. And every person I talk to in the small business world says the exact same thing. So here's a concrete idea for you. We're going to create a central hub, a one-stop in City Hall that makes it so that we get all of the services you need in one place. No more talking to one person and they say, that's not my job. And then they send you away. And that happens all the time. So let's make government efficient. Let's realize that the people of Cincinnati and the businesses, particularly the small businesses of Cincinnati, are our customers. And let's start trying to serve them. I got another one, though. You know, small businesses in Cincinnati got hit hard by the pandemic, and minority-owned businesses, black-owned businesses, got hit double hard. The reality is that they shuttered at twice the rate of white-owned businesses, and that's a real problem in our neighborhoods. When local small businesses close, you lose jobs, you lose opportunities. So one of the things I want to do with the stimulus fund, and this is a very, you know, pro-economy approach, you know, very capitalist approach, we're going to take money from the stimulus fund, and we're going to seed a minority friends and family fund, which is the purpose of which is to bring other investment in and have a fund not for tech startups like what I've done, but for early stage investment in rebuilding black-owned small businesses in our community.
All right, stimulus fund. I guess I'm kind of just curious to know how that would operate. And is it exclusively then just for minorities? I mean, I always end up viewing things when you identify anything just by race that one can view it as a racist concept.
Well, I think there's a lot to do for small businesses. We got to reinvest in small businesses and bring collaboration. One of the core concepts of our race is replacing the culture of corruption in City Hall with a culture of collaboration. We have a lot of organizations in the city for small businesses that are of any stripe. We've got the Minority Business Accelerator, the Cincinnati Chamber of Commerce, the African American Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
We've got the Hamilton County Business Center. And all of them, like, are doing their own thing, and none of them are working closely together in a coordinated fashion. So I think there's a lot we can do to streamline permitting, to streamline the services you get from each of those for every sort of business.
Yeah, that's actually two areas you focused on. First off, the permitting process and the hassle you get with city government generally to try to do anything whatsoever. It's like herding cats. Well, then you have the same thing. You just acknowledge there's a whole multitude of organizations out there designed to help and facilitate the growth of small businesses and get them started.
Yeah.
It's just that they're not working together. So maybe it isn't a massive government spending program. It's just simply a government mandated or a facilitated coordination effort. That doesn't sound very expensive if you get all these different groups to sort of start working collaboratively.
Yeah, you know, leadership isn't expensive. It just takes the right people.
Fair enough.
And that's what it really comes down to. I'm going to give you one more example that's not business, but is close to my heart. I was the board chair. I built this school called the Donald and Marion Spencer Center. It's a magnet public school in Walnut Hills. And we built it from zero to 350 kids. It serves kids all over the city. It's a great example of what our city can do when we break down the barriers between us and just serve. But here's the thing. When we opened that school, it didn't have a single crosswalk. We had seven-year-olds walking to school, no crosswalk. I requested a crosswalk. The school requested a crosswalk. We got our community council request a crosswalk. It took 2 years for the Department of Engineering to respond, and the response was a form letter that said it's not in the budget.
Perfect. Perfect.
And I'll tell you, I've yet to meet anyone who says we shouldn't spend tax money on crosswalks for public schools.
Okay.
Right? I mean,
all right. You walked into it, Gavi. I'm going to give you a break to think about this now because we have a budget crisis, I anticipate, on our hands. So pause for a moment. We'll take a break. We'll come back more with Gavi Begtrip. He's running for Cincinnati, for mayor of the city of Cincinnati. I got to mention, though, one of the great. Right now at 55 KRC, the talk station. Brian Thomas here right now with Gavi. Gavi's his name. He is running for mayor. Gavi Begtrip. You can find him online at VoteGavi, VoteGavi.com, to hopefully learn more. I've been enjoying this discussion with his vision for the city of Cincinnati, running as a Democrat, never held political office before, entrepreneur. He started businesses. He's been involved in budgeting. He mentioned, and I failed to point this out, former congressional policy advisor for Gabby Giffords. Obviously, that provides some measure of insight into, you know, politically where you come from, Gavi, and people who are familiar with Gabby Giffords will know that. And I know you say it with pride. I just have a lot of very conservative-minded folks, and my little L libertarian-minded political bent just suggests it may be a little too liberal for some. But you're addressing these questions wonderfully. Now, here's the big elephant in the room, Gavi. You know what's coming. The budget.
Yeah.
Now, this dovetails nicely with my understanding, and please correct me right off the bat if I'm wrong, that you are in favor of Issue 3, the Affordable Housing Initiative.
That's correct. I have reservations, and we'll discuss them, but
okay,
I'm in favor of it.
Great, because you anticipate the reservations. All right, let's start with what I think. Let's start with what I think you and I agree on. The right now, without question, I think it's irrefutable, and Cranley's put the numbers out there because you mentioned the COVID stimulus money. Mayor Cranley wants to take about half of it, or $60 million or so of the money coming in, and park it, because we are already right now facing $20 or so million deficits into the next three fiscal years. So that's with the current budget projections. I don't know that anyone has baked into the cake the loss of the residents who don't live in the city of Cincinnati, who are no longer going to be working in the city. My wife is in that position. She wasn't a city dweller, but she worked in Northern Kentucky. Her office is now permanently in our home. They've gotten rid of the space, so she's no longer paying taxes, or shouldn't be, where she used to work. That's the case for two-thirds of the people who pay into the earnings tax, which generates 80% of the general fund. So you're going to have a bigger deficit. Now, you think that I'm right and accurate in saying that? We don't know what it is, but it's going to be less money coming into the coffers than pre-COVID.
Well, I think it's bigger than that. I think we have to rethink the entire budget and its revenue sources for a new economy. That's all there is to it. As the one candidate who's not only written $20 billion budgets in Congress, but also balanced the budget in his own business, I think I'm well positioned to do that. But you have to look at both sides of the ledger. The reality is we have been cutting into our revenue streams by abating McMansions for the last decade, right? And we treat all that cutting everybody's future taxes as free, but what we've actually done is made it so that we have less and less and less revenue. This issue of remote working, it's not a settled issue. I don't think we know exactly where that's going to land. We have to remember that regardless of where you live in the region, you live in the region because of the city of Cincinnati. And when I talk about working together, we have to remember that. If you live in Milford, or you live in Northern Kentucky, or you live wherever, you're here because of the services and opportunities that you get by living in close proximity to the city of Cincinnati. So we're going to have to rethink our revenues. If it turns out that we do not get revenues, we do not get those wage taxes from everyone who is working remotely and no longer living in the city, even though their companies are in the city. If it turns out that a large majority of people end up not returning, I think some will, but I don't know that will be broad. Brian, the solution is not just, oh, we'll cut the budget a little bit. We have to rework the entire budget, and we probably have to work with the county because that's bigger than a little bit of an issue in Cincinnati's budget. That's a reworking tax systems and our economy.
Yeah.
And, I think, not to plug myself too much here, I guess that's my job.
It is.
I think maybe hiring somebody who's been, or rather voting for someone who's been doing things the same way for the last 40 years and not solving any of the problems is not the solution to that. Maybe somebody who understands the new economy and has balanced the budget in the private sector. If we have a big problem, let's get a problem solver in there.
To the extent you're thinking about a countywide tax that is shared between the city and the county, I have a feeling you're going to get a lot of pushback from people outside of the city, particularly given what they have seen, the corruption, the mismanagement, the Metropolitan Sewer District is another issue. Can't get the problems resolved. Even with a Democrat commission and a Democrat-controlled city council, it's still a complete mess, that relationship.
Yeah.
So I'm just skeptical that it's some broader change in taxation that is going to benefit the city and the county at the same time probably ain't going to fly. But let us talk about the immediate effect, which is what you're going to have to deal with. The taxation system isn't changing right away. This is the reality. Earnings tax provides 80% of the general fund. All of the unions are against issue three. All of the city council members. I know Cranley's against it. I know David Mann's against it. The head of the fire union is against it. President Matt Alter. I talked to Dan Hills the other day, president of the FOP. They're frightened to death that this is going to go through, resulting in cuts. And Vice Mayor Smith was on the program this morning. He said, listen, if this gets through, we're only going to have garbage collection every 2 weeks. That is a reality. And he went through a litany of other things that are going to be cut. It's a fact that they will be cut because you've taken from the general fund with no flexibility, $50 million off the top every year, and then more as inflation rolls in. That hamstrings flexibility on dealing with a budget. How do you respond to that, Gavi?
Here's how I respond. Let's talk about affordable housing for a moment. I've run a school. I've run businesses. To me, you have to start with affordability first. And just give me a moment.
Wait. The predicate for me, though, isn't whether or not we agree affordable housing is important. It is. The problem is that this solution hamstrings the budget. That's all. I don't know where the money's going to go. I know it goes an unelected group of people. That's a concern. Fine, we'll put that one aside. I don't know what they're going to do and how they hope to accomplish the problem. But it gives the city council, the city manager, the mayor, zero flexibility to deal with perhaps a really down taxation year. It's going to ruin things if you can't say, all right, normally we're going to give you guys $50 million, but this year, man, it's only going to be 10 because all of that money is going to take, we aren't going to have garbage collection every once a month then. I mean, you can see that's the only practical element that I want to focus on.
Well, here's the thing. We have a city hall, as you said, that is the most corrupt in a century, and that doesn't solve any problems. You know, I didn't finish my story earlier. The coda on that story on the crosswalk is that in 2019, 8 Cincinnati public school kids got hit by cars walking to school. And then all of a sudden we had a crosswalk. And this is a perfect example of how City Hall works. We don't do anything until there's a crisis, until kids are dying. So we have an affordability crisis. When this charter amendment dropped, I said the following. I said, look, this isn't perfect. 9,500 people have spoken and said we need to address this problem. City Hall needs to do something about it. It doesn't have to be $50 million. It doesn't have to be this mandate. They need to do something to show that they're willing to address this problem before this makes it on the ballot. And you know what City Hall did? Not a thing, right? And so it was in their control. They're now all going to fearmonger about all these things. But instead of actually trying to solve the problem, they just spent all their time fearmongering about this amendment. So let's talk about it.
But the you're in favor of something, though. I mean, you're now in favor of it. The solution that was brought up because council refused to act, you're in favor of it just because it purports to be a solution. But that crosswalk that you were told in front of your school that didn't get built because there wasn't any money in the budget is even less likely to get built once you take another $50 million out of the general fund. That's my only point. This is zero flexibility time. The amendment itself gives you no flexibility, and that's going to be a train wreck. And all these folks in power, people already there in elected capacity, whether it's the union heads or vice mayor of the city of Cincinnati who deals with the budget, they've all said this will be ruinous. Not that they're against affordable housing. They're against the mandate that it's $50 million minimum every year.
But I think there's a false narrative here that you can be for something but not want to give it any money, right? I mean, that's not how government works.
Well, that's what you're campaigning on, Gavi. You're the guy who's going to bring about solutions to these problems. That's what you're campaigning on. So how about, Gavi, campaign against issue 3 and say vote for me because I've got a better solution that isn't going to wreck the budget.
So issue 3 is, I think, likely going to pass, and we'll see. We'll see how much money people run against it. It needs fixing. The first $50 million we can take from the stimulus, so it's not an immediate impact. But you're right; it does tie our hands. I don't like that as a solution. But what we can do is go back and address it and fix it.
It's tough to unring a bell, Gavi. You know that. Once it's passed,
I disagree. All the time we pass things and then we go fix them. The tax abatements are a great example. We had tax abatements for a long time. Then we realized that people were getting tax abatements on $1 million homes, and so we changed the tax abatements so that they were limited to $500,000. We need to change them again so that they're focused on bringing money into poor communities, not into Hyde Park. And the same is true here. We actually will have an opportunity if we choose, if this passes in November, we can amend it and change it so that we can open up the funding sources. I don't think all $50 million needs to come from the city. I think the right way to solve this is the way we solved the universal preschool, which is we brought in the private sector, the philanthropic community, and we found the money by catalyzing it with money from the city. And that's where we need to get to. This amendment doesn't allow us to do that. That's true. I think we can fix that. And we will. I mean, the real solution here is public-private partnerships. The real solution here is bringing money, not just from some city, but having the city stimulate it. And the real solution is not just the Affordable Housing Trust Fund, but addressing all of the onerous zoning issues that keep us from being able to build in the city.
Well, that sounds to me like a libertarian point. Yeah, all the impediments in the way of people trying to just do business. That I embrace. Dr. Gabi Bagtrip, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. I hope we get to talk again. I appreciate your enthusiasm. It's Vote Gavi, GAVI.com, if you want to check out his website. And between that now and whenever we talk again, best of health to you and your family.
Thank you as well. I look forward to it.
Take care, my friend. 8:30. Oh, look, it's Thursday. Happy Thursday. Oh, look, it's 8:37. We're a few minutes late, but I know my next guest, you know who's coming up, Jay Ratliff, iHeartMedia aviation expert. He wasn't able to start, so I went extra long there with Gabi Bagtrip, and that was cool. And now we have Jay on the phone to talk about. And welcome back, Jay, and we wish you the best of health and hope everything's well in your world.
Very much so. I'm sorry for the delay. I had to cut the KOA off in Denver. They wanted to talk about their All-Star game.
That's okay. It actually ended up working right because Gabi Bagtrip and I, who's running for mayor, we were involved in a budget conversation that took me way past the segment length. So it conveniently worked out that you were a little bit late today too. So we're back on cue, and I don't understand this first one. I think of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and what a wonderful sentiment, concept, philosophy, content of character, not color of skin. It's
right.
Who you are, not what you look like. And I would say that also ascribes or applies to your gender. It's who you are and how you act and how you interact with people and your qualifications, not whether you're a man or a woman. In the case of pilots, I think that applies equally. So why is it United promises to hire half of all future pilots of just female gender or people of color, in their words?
Well, I mean, maybe they're trying to show how much they, you know, care. I don't know. When you look at this, so much of it's about perception. So when United comes out and says that they want a diverse workforce, we applaud that. And they say that we would like to see more women and people of color. We get that. That's good. But when they take the next step and say and state what you indicated, 50% of our new hire pilots, our goal is to hire one of those two groups. And you have to look at the numbers. Okay, what are your numbers now? And United's current numbers within their pilot corps is 7 and 13% respectively. So if they could double those numbers, which would be significant and certainly would be an improvement if we're talking about qualified individuals, and you're still not going to be anywhere near this 50% goal that they've thrown out there, which means if you come up short of this goal, you're going to be blasted for not doing what you said. And then, of course, you run into the same problem that the Federal Aviation Administration did when they took this exact same position. And they were having a very difficult time filling air traffic control spots with qualified individuals. Not everybody wants to be a pilot. So is there enough demand there from women, people of color, whatever it might happen to be, that would help them fill that position? And to me, it's just the fear is an obvious one here.
Yes,
are we going to replace or hire individuals based on the fact they're a woman or something else in lieu of the qualifications of the individual?
That's what worries me.
Scary situation.
Well, and you know about laws of supply and demand with regard to pilots and what's available and what's not more than most. I don't know what the candidate pool is like. I know you've said in the past on our segment that a lot of the airline pilots come from the military, and I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what the racial or gender makeup of those that are flying for the military are. I mean, I don't know. Maybe are all of those flying in military interested in commercial aviation jobs when they get out of the military?
No, and I have several friends that are fighter pilots. In the military, and I've asked them frequently if, you know, are you going to be looking at, you know, getting out and applying for any sort of a commercial position, and for the most part, no. They like their positions in the military, and they're going to stay there.
Wow.
And if they're black, they're white, or whatever, I've got friends that, you know, from every background, and they're all saying the same thing as far as, at least in this group, that they're going to be staying there. But, you know, there's times when you do need a little bit of a wake-up call and you need to revisit your rules. I remember when Star Trek actress Nichelle Nichols was asked to speak before NASA. She did many years ago. And when she did, she saw the astronaut corps was pretty well free of any African-Americans. And she said, hey, where's more people that look like me? And NASA said, hey, we do need to do a better job. They incorporated her to try to boost the interest in the in applications. And it worked to a degree. And I salute United Airlines for doing the same thing. But when policy gets ahead of procedures as far as qualifications, that's when we all need to get worried. And this idea of trying to promote the perception of we care with this type of situation is, to me, a very scary road to go down.
Yes.
And if they can't fill those numbers, are they going to feel pressured to lower some of the qualifications to fill those numbers? And they'll say no, but the reality is they're going to have to live up to this promise they've made.
Yeah.
And it's going to be interesting to see which way this goes.
Well, I guess much in the same way you're talking about a marketing with the NASA program, you know, you need outreach. You need, hey, we're over here and we would really welcome you. I would argue rather than changing, as you are indicating, changing the policy and then going out into the world and trying to fulfill the needs of the policy, you go out into the world and you start soliciting people more directly, qualified females, qualified minorities. Hey, we're over here and we're hiring. Do you meet the qualifications? You know, it's a little, you're competing with other industries, I suppose, for this talent. So you're going to need to make yourself known and make yourself, make others aware that you are interested in them as employees.
Well, and it's a good step. It really is. And, you know, there's a lot of organizations that are connected to, you know, trying to invigorate the younger population,
yeah,
minorities and different people in aviation. And my business is connected with a lot of those to try to help stir the interest of aviation to tomorrow's pilots. And that type of thing, I think, can continue and can go on. But really, when you look at things, you've just got to be careful at how far you go with that, because this game of perception is a dangerous one. Delta Airlines, you know, they are the last airline to block the middle seat. They are so proud of that, Brian. They puff their chest out and say, basically, we care more than others, and we've got this middle seat blocked, and we're going to continue blocking it till May 1st, except for last weekend. They had a problem with a computer issue. They had too many passengers, had a staffing problem, and they had a ton of passengers with no flights. So on Sunday and Monday, they decided to start selling those middle seats to accommodate passengers, quickly saying, we're going to go right back to blocking middle seats on Tuesday. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, if this is really a safety issue, what are we doing here?
It's
just the hypocrisy in this managing the perception of things that drives so many of us crazy.
It's marketing. You know, if you're being marketed to, there's always somebody in there bending the truth or lying or trying to, you know, make a fool out of you that you get to believe in anyway. Travel, you and I have been, obviously it's a subject matter of dealing with this aviation segment. The travel has been off precipitously since last year. COVID prevented travel. You talk about the empty seats. Nobody's been traveling business anymore. I know you have some February versus February numbers to give the listeners a little bit of an indication of how much it's off. And this figure is rather frightening.
Yeah, the International Air Transport Association compared last February to this February, and travel was down 89%+.
89.
And around the world, we can see why with the pandemic that hit us. We're usually seeing 2.5 million people fly this time of year domestically here in the United States, and yesterday the TSA screened 1.2 million. So, you know, we're at the halfway point and then some. We're certainly seeing nothing but a million plus every single day for about 34 days in a row, which is great to see. Of note, last year's date yesterday was 94,931. So a significant departure from the norm last year. But,
yeah,
you know, we're seeing the numbers increase, and that's good to see, and we're continuing to get reports daily from the TSA reflecting that. But Brian, as you indicated, it's mainly leisure travel.
Yeah.
And as a result, airlines that make 70% of their revenue from the corporations, the corporate traveler, the men and women that fly all the time, if they don't come back in numbers, Well, the concern is how the airline's going to make up for that lost revenue, and they're going to find a way to do it. They're used to making money, and if their current business model is not providing that, they're going to find another way to do it, which means the real possibility of an increase in airfares as we move through this year.
Or maybe the reduction in fleet size and number of pilots needed, you know, because it would fly in the face of a United Airlines effort to hire new pilots, I guess. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe there's just more out there than the market demands. And I guess I kind of wonder, as big as these industries are in terms of the amount of money they generate, and of course the tax money they've recently received by way of bailout money in these packages, are they out there doing independent research, or have they retained firms that do research to find out if there's any hope in hell that the business travel is going to return?
Well, the public message is we're confident the business travel is going to come back at the same extent it was before. But behind closed doors, there's some real concern because of the popularity and how companies have embraced, many of them for the first time, the video conferencing and found out that, hey,
right,
we don't need to travel. We have a whole year of data that shows we don't need to travel as we did before.
Yeah.
So there's concern, and there's a ton of surveys out there, but the ones that continue to surface are the ones that show that it's going to be a strong recovery on the corporate side. Most of these articles, though, are sponsored by this airline or that airline group or something that's out there saying that we're going to see this. They're the ones that came up with this term revenge travel. That's what people are doing. They don't even care where they're going to go. They're just going to go to the airport and jump on an airplane anywhere because they haven't been able to before. And I'm thinking, yeah, I know that's what you want us to do, but the reality is, you know, only so many people can afford four trips a year. That's just not going to continue at the pace that we're seeing right now. But, Brian, they're worried, and they should be.
They should be. That's why I wondered if they did their own independent research or retained a research firm to kind of really take a hard look at this. They wouldn't probably reveal it to us because it would be gloom and doom that would be revealed. But I think at some point that kind of thing is going to have to be reflected in their filings, their 8-Ks and 10-Qs.
The studies were there. The concern was there. But now that they're seeing the return in travelers, they have some real data in front of them. They can crunch real numbers now saying, okay, of the 1.2 million people that flew yesterday, how many of these were on the business side of things and how many of them were the corporate fares. They can see that easily, and they can also look at their future bookings, although that's a bit off because, you know, leisure people make your reservations
way in advance. Yeah.
Corporate, the ones that have the flexible type of travel, a lot of that's last-minute type of thing.
I want you in Boston this afternoon.
Exactly.
What?
As an airline, how do you project that? And that's, again, it's a very, very complicated business model when you look at what they have to do on projections, and you throw in something that none of us have ever been through before with this pandemic, and the shift that's taken place with the way businesses conduct business. They have some challenges before them that are really going to test their resolve. And believe me, they're going to do whatever they can to survive and to continue to thrive. They're not losing the money they were before. We're almost at a break-even point for many of these airlines, which is good to see. But look, their airplanes are 80% full, 85% full in some routes, and you're barely breaking even.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of room there for profit, which is why the corporate type of this conversation is so critical to airlines as they move forward.
Well, and we're talking about air travel and supporting the airlines. There's that ripple effect that, well, if there's less travel, there's less demand for the equipment itself, which obviously impacts aircraft manufacturers.
It's a ripple effect. Remember, before the pandemic, one out of every 10 jobs on the planet were connected to the travel industry in one degree or another. And when you see that 89% reduction that we talked about February over February, that's one of the reasons that the global economy and the domestic economy has suffered as it has, because when you throttle back on that many jobs and that many industries and sectors, I mean, it's going to take a significant amount of time to recover from that, and you're hoping that all the businesses that were impacted can survive. Unfortunately, several of them were unable to do so.
Yeah, sad thing, but it's the new reality. Jay Ratliff, before you go, you always give us a hub delay projections and what's going on today. Weather seems pretty decent here. What's going on out there?
Well, if you're tooling your way to the airport, the hubs you hope you're not connecting through today are Atlanta, Chicago, and Minneapolis. Those three small hubs, which probably have about 60% of the flight activity of the day going through them, those three hubs are going to see some significant weather-related delays that could approach an hour. Already seeing some canceled flights as a result. So and make sure the airlines have a way to get a hold of you so that if your itinerary is impacted, they can get a hold of you straight away to give you some options that you can consider.
Sound advice, as we always get from our aviation expert, Jay Ratliff. It's always a pleasure to have you on our during our weekly discussions. Jay, between now and next Thursday, I wish you and your family the best of health.
Have a good day, sir.
You too. Coming up at 851, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Come time to mention Colin Electric. You know,
hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.